Welcome to the 90 Minutes or Less Film Fest. My name is Sam Clements, and this is the podcast that celebrates films with a 90-minute or less runtime. In each episode, a guest will select a film and join me to add to our ongoing fictional film festival. Usually. Today, we're recording a spotlight episode where we shine a light on a new under 90-minute film release. Our film today is Driveaway Dolls, coming to a cinema near you very soon as this episode is being released. The film was originally titled Driveaway Dykes, but very much being released as Driveaway Dolls. The movie was directed by Ethan Coen, co-written by Ethan Coen and Trisha Cook, and edited by Trisha Cook. They are a husband and wife duo, not only working on this film Driveaway Dolls, but you'll know Ethan Coen's work from the projects he makes with his brother Joel, including Raising Arizona, one of my personal favorites, Miller's Crossing, Inside Llewellyn Davis, and so many, many more. You'll also know Trisha's work as editor on numerous Coen Brothers films, including Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, The Man Who Wasn't There, The Big Lebowski, and a whole host of others. This film is something a little different, based on a script that Ethan and Trisha co-wrote, taking inspiration from more knockabout films, such as the work of Russ Meyer, but Driveaway Dolls is a blast, beautifully made, and it wears its under 90-minute runtime very well indeed. It's got a great cast, two excellent leads in Margaret Qualley and Geraldine Viswanathan, and a fab supporting cast. I don't want to mention everybody's names. I'm not quite sure if they're out there in the marketing, but there's some fun people to look out for. But some people I will mention who are also fab to look out for include Beanie Feldstein, who just absolutely steals every scene she's in, Coleman Domingo, and Bill Camp. Bill Camp, ah, love that guy. So when we heard about Driveaway Dolls, and more importantly, when I saw that beautiful runtime, I reached out to the movie studio and I said, you know, whatever happens, please, 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 can we talk to Trisha Cook and Ethan Coen about this film? It's a brand new 84-minute film coming to cinemas. It's a perfect fit, right? And I'm so grateful because we managed to talk to Ethan and Trisha at their home in New York quite early in the morning. Thank you so much, guys, for getting up early to record this pod with us. And yeah, we just thought we'd have a little spotlight episode about Driveaway Dolls and a chat with the filmmakers, Trisha Cook and Ethan Coen. Hello, Ethan and Trisha.
Thank you for having
us.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm someone who sees a lot of films at the cinema, and something that always tickles me is an under 90-minute runtime. And I think Driveaway Dolls is a beautiful 84 minutes. I mean, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
We'll take it. Yeah. It's a probably fast, short movie. 84 minutes, yeah.
I don't know if you get time to go to the cinema if you see lots of movies, but do you ever look at how long a film might be when you're sort of considering what you might watch?
Yes, a big yes. I mean,
always
a resounding yes. I'm sure, you know, all the long movies, the prestigious long movies that have come out recently, they might actually be good movies, but we haven't seen them. I don't know. It's hard to commit to that much time. Yeah, I'm right there with you.
I love a film of all sort of runtimes, but I do love it when you feel like you've had a complete meal and it's still daylight outside, you know, and it has been that brisk hour and a half. And I think Driveaway Dolls did that for me. So, yeah, props on that front.
Well, thank you. Not to say that we haven't seen movies that are over 90 minutes long.
I remember Giant in the, what was it, early 60s. That might have been the last one I went to. Lawrence of Arabia, an intermission. We should have put an intermission in our movie.
We saw a Stalker recently. Good, hefty meal.
Yeah, if you have the dignity of a Tarkovsky, you can get away with that. Sadly, we're just dopes.
Yeah, we're far too juvenile to talk for more than 84 minutes.
With Driveaway Dolls, I'd love to know a little bit about how this idea first came to be.
Well, as with many things, it all started with Trish sitting in a bar.
that's true. Not many things, but this movie did start with a friend of mine and I talking about Drive Away experiences and then coming up with the title Drive Away Dykes. And we thought that it was, you know, a really fun alliterative title, which is, you know, always good. And so I mentioned it to Ethan when I got home, and he was like, ah, that's great. We should write that movie. And which we did. We kind of started writing the movie based on the title.
How sad that we had to change the title. Too bad. Drive Away Dykes is just where it began, and it is the good title. In our minds, it is the title.
When you come home, Tricia, with the title and you start talking about making it a movie, how did that writing process go? You know, what does it start with? A conversation? Does it start with a notepad, or you just like fire up the laptop and start typing?
Yeah, the latter. You just kind of, you bounce ideas around and you say, okay, well, if it's Drive Away Dykes, you know, it's a lesbian movie, it's a lesbian road movie. And what would be fun about that if they're going to a drive away? I don't think you have driveaways in the UK, but, you know, you pick up a car that's not your own and you drive it to a destination that someone needs it to go. And so what could end up in that car? What could be in that car? And then you kind of go from there. Okay, there's something that they weren't expecting. Someone else wants it. You know, then more characters are added. And and then you just play around, you know, like with the Cynthia Plastercaster idea that kind of worked its way into the movie. And we were both fans of Cynthia Plastercaster. So like bits and pieces start coming in. But when we wrote it, and I think is the case with Ethan, although he could speak to that better than I could, we didn't know how it was going to end. I mean, we just started and then just wrote and, you know, kind of finally figured out, oh, okay, this is where it's going.
Yeah, it's much like I write with Joel, and it is exactly like you say, just a conversation. We talk each scene back and forth, not having outline, not knowing where it's going to go. On the principle that if the writers don't know where it's going to go, the audience can't possibly know. And that's a good thing.
I love road movies. It's such a good setting for a story. And, you know, it enables your characters to obviously literally travel, but also to like figuratively, you know, sort of drop into different scenes and meet different, you know, foils and characters along the way. When does the tone, I guess, you know, sort of present itself to you? Because I think this film is a blast, and it's, you know, there's a race against time, which I love. But there's lots of sort of comic interludes as we drive.
Yeah. Well, yeah, a road movie is, yeah, like you say, the scenery is always new, and that's good. But when does the tone present itself? I got to say, everything, even that, is implicit in the title. Clearly, that's kind of a fun, maybe a little bit transgressive, you know, and kind of an exploitation movie. It's just a, you know, a whiz bang movie. That's all of that's implicit in the title.
Yeah. I mean, tonally we knew going in, okay, this is going to be kind of a fun, silly, you know, comedy or caper movie. And then, you know, that also gives you liberty to kind of come up with the most absurd ideas and kind of play around with them and put them in if you can figure out a way to make them work, which was fun.
It's even connected to what you were asking about how we write it. It's like it also is implicit in the title. It's like you're not outlining where it's going to go, because you just see where you are having written a scene and go, okay, what's implicit in that for what would happen next? Of course, the challenge is met. Figuring out what should happen next without it being predictable. You know, it's got to kind of be inevitable, but surprising. That's kind of the juggle you're playing with.
One of my favorite things about, I guess, this type of movie is when the protagonist is kind of oblivious to the danger they're in and what's going on. And again, as an audience, we know more than the characters, so, you know, we're sort of maybe a little bit more cautious, but to see them just freewheeling is such a joy. Was that always how it was structured, you know, sort of obliviously taking something and then us seeing, you know, the threat looming behind?
Yeah, well, that was kind of the premise, and that's even kind of implicit in the in one of the characters, the character Margaret Qualley plays, you could define as being oblivious.
Geraldine. Freewheeling, yeah.
Geraldine's is a character is Geraldine Viswanathan's character is a little more uptight and
risk averse.
Yeah.
How did you find Margaret and Geraldine? And full disclaimer, you know, I come to this film as a Geraldine Viswanathan fan. Ever since Blockers, I've been just glued to what she's doing next.
She's great. Yeah, Blockers, she was so funny in Blockers.
We just, you know, we met him in the audition and auditions. We didn't even know there were. We saw Blockers after we asked Geraldine to do the movie. I don't know that we'd seen her in anything. We kind of didn't care, you know, about previous work. You see the actor, they come in and they're great. You go, oh, okay, you're it. I mean, she was just great, both of them. They just presented themselves and, you know, they just made the scenes, the audition scenes work. And you go, okay, can't argue with that. That's going to be good. That's what we're after.
Yeah, I hadn't seen either of them in anything, I don't think. I'd seen Beanie in Booksmart and really loved her in Booksmart. But Margaret and Geraldine were both new to us. Margaret, not so much to Ethan, but to me. And after we saw her and really liked her, a friend of ours, or Rachel Tinner, one of the casting directors, said, you should see the Spike Jonze commercial that she made where she dances. And after we saw that, we were like, oh, well, she's perfect. She's a total goofball. You know, that really works for us.
Their friendship is really infectious. To feel so invested when you're sat in the cinema auditorium, you know, watching them get on. Do you have a rehearsal process with your cast, or you know, is this quite a quick shoot?
Well, it was a pretty fast shoot, faster than I've ever done, 35 days. But we did rehearse. We did rehearse with the two of them more than with anybody. Other characters, other actors come and go. And because of actors' schedules, there's kind of a limit as to how much you can rope them into a rehearsal process. But Geraldine and Margaret did rehearse. I kind of compare it to the Big Lebowski, where we had three guys in a room for a couple of weeks. It really helps. I mean, they know what they're doing and they know what the characters are, but getting to feel each other playing together, you know, as a kind of like musicians playing together, they do it more. They feel each other out. They're better at it.
And Margaret and Geraldine became quick friends, like within the first day after rehearsing, they, I think, went and took an hour long walk, and it was sweet to watch their friendship develop while we were shooting.
Where do you want to go?
Tallahassee.
Tallahassee.
What's wrong with Tallahassee? It's very nice. There's Spanish moss and live oak.
Curly here.
Don't call me Curly.
And your name, Curly?
My name is Curly. We just met. It's too familiar.
Have you ever been to Tallahassee?
No, I got good sense. Your car is a Dodge Aries.
Oh, okay. Is that a good car?
Not really.
As well as your, you know, amazing younger members of the cast, you've got so many, you know, sort of like stalwarts of cinema and a few sort of favorites from my side, especially Bill Camp. Like, if Bill Camp is in a movie, you know you're going to have a good time.
That's true. And I love calling Bill the stalwart of the cinema. I think that's going to be the name of his biography. The stalwart of this movie, certainly.
Yeah.
We told him he was the lump of iron at the center of the universe.
Yeah, it's made everything go. He's so good. He understands the part so well. It's fun to watch because he plays around with it, you know, on set while you're, you know, shooting, and will make, you know, subtle changes. He's just really fun to watch as an actor and a lovely man.
Yeah, and you watch that stone face playing around with things, and it's mind blowing. You know, the paradox of stone face and play.
he's so good at reacting and not reacting, and having this sort of physical presence, which you can sort of like feel him emitting, you know, some sort of ray on to the other cast members.
Completely. Yeah, man, a good actor, man, a good actor doesn't feel like he has to be active, but Bill certainly doesn't.
With those roles, like the role Bills plays, do you have actors in mind as you're planning, or again, is it another sort of audition process for them in the smaller roles?
This is unusual for me. This movie unusual for me in that nobody was specifically in mind when we were writing. When I write with Joel, it's usually the case that a bunch of people we go, okay, this, it's part of figuring out who the character is. This could be so and so. But in this case, no.
I mean, there were parts that, the two goons, Arliss and Flynn, those are two friends of Ethan's. And he, it's just like CJ and Joey, they know each other. They'll be great. He'd worked with them on some plays. And so.
Yeah, but that was having written the script.
Right, we went after the fact.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when we were looking for people for Chief, I really was excited about Coleman Domingo. I knew his work and I was like, I hope he wants, I hope he'll do this part. So there were a lot of those kind of like, oh, I really hope this person will do this, not gigantic part, and that all happened and fell into place in a way that was nice.
Yeah, that's fun to watch. Coleman and Bill playing together is so fun. They tickled each other. I mean, Coleman's character being so smooth and Bill's being so lumpy.
When you were, sort of talking about this film with people, were there ever sort of film examples that inspired you that you would maybe sort of give out or mention when talking about this project?
Well, I mean, Russ Meyer and for me, Russ Meyer and Doris Wishman were two filmmakers whose work had seemed inspirational to me for this film, Faster Pussycat Kill Kill and Bad Girls Go to Hell in particular. There's a shot from Poison Ivy that we kind of replicated in the movie. So talked about that movie a lot.
But that's kind of unusual. That specificity is unusual. That's one of the few examples of something really specific we referred to. I see a cat's tail.
Yeah, I got my cat's a big fan of your work.
After the fact, I kind of thought, well, maybe we were thinking about, Pedro Almodóvar, his movies kind of zip by and have a lot of fizz in the story, you know what I mean? But we didn't talk about that specifically.
The psychedelic sequences, Stan Brakhage is someone who I had seen in film school, that kind of stuff, the more kind of like 60s psychedelic avant-garde films we referenced while we were talking about those scenes with Ari Wegner, the cinematographer, and then with Voodoo Dog, an amazing company in the UK who did those sequences for us.
On this film, director, co-writers, editor as well, when it gets into the edit, is that where, you sort of really find the pace, or is sort of what we see, on screen, was that kind of how the script was already laid out?
Well, it's that kind of movie. It's the kind of movie that has to have pace or it sucks.
A lot of that was written into the script, even the transitions and all of those things we knew we were going to do before we got into the cutting room. And then actually when we got into the cutting room, the first cut was so short, we had to kind of go in and open it up, and, Voodoo Dog helped there. We just kept saying, make those sequences longer. We knew the script kind of dictated the pace, and the style of film dictated the pace. So.
That feels like a nice problem to have. Often I talk to filmmakers who are sort of like, we had to keep shaving little bits off, but it's unusual to say we had to add something in.
It's harder to add something in than to shave something off.
Thank God for end credits.
I really love the music to this film as well. It's got, it just sort of adds to that breezy package. Was Carter Burwell always someone you had in mind?
Well, it was kind of an assumption of ours. I have never done a movie without Carter. He's done every single one of the movies me and Joel have done. So we just kind of, and Trish, of course, knows him well from having cut several of our movies, and Carter's great.
But then the source music we used, some of that was written into the scripts, but a lot of it was, either things that we came up with, or we had two really great music supervisors or music people working with us Tiffany Anders and Chris
Roberts.
Yeah, sent us a lot of great material as well.
Yeah, some of it very familiar and some of it really obscure that we didn't know about and wouldn't have known about except for those two people.
And then
Maggot Brain is familiar.
Yeah, and Maggot Brain was brought to us, you know.
Actually, that was suggested by Miley.
By Miley, who used it while we were shooting to kind of like in her... the movement for her movement. And we're like, oh, that works really well.
Linda Ronstadt, I think people have heard of.
It's true. Have heard of.
Was written into the script. We knew going in that we were going to use Linda Ronstadt.
Well, thank you so much for Driveway Dolls. Thank you for an 84-minute movie. I think you're the first, you know, sort of major new release that's under 90 minutes of 2024. Thank you so much for your time and look forward to seeing what's next.
Yeah.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your podcatcher of choice so you'll never miss an episode. You can also leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and if you have a moment, why not share an episode with your friends? Every recommendation helps. You can contact us on our website, 90minfilmfest.com, and you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at 90minfilmfest. The podcast is produced by me, Sam Clements, and Louise Owen. It's edited by Louise Owen, with sound mixing and additional editing by Luke Smith. Our music is by Martin Ostwick, and our artwork is by Sam Gilby. Enjoy those shorter films, folks. We'll be back in a couple of weeks.
We're a proud member of the Stripped Media Network.